minute, I felt like a jilted lover, Tom. You know, you text that special someone, and then they don't text back. You text them again. You don't text back. You don't. You get ghosted.
That's that love sync button you're talking about?
No. No. Oh, okay. I was talking about being ghosting. I felt like I got ghosted by Bucky's Auto Service Centers.
Oh, I see.
They went away for 3 days.
Well, absence makes the heart grow fonder.
That's
for both of you.
Sure, Tom. 16 locations since 1948. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Take your car there. For crying out loud, they'll do a great job for you. Have a day. How long did the president speak for?
It went on and on and on.
Yeah.
I don't know, John. Maybe an hour.
Okay.
6 minutes, maybe.
All right. Let's see. National emergency declared. We had a pretty good idea here. He was going to do this. So he signs the one for $1.3 billion. That keeps the government open, and he gets a lot of extra stuff for the border security. So he gets additional ICE, he gets some more surveillance, he gets cameras, he gets more support, he gets more administration, more judges. They give him all of that, right? But it seems like he wants to go to the mat on this one and wants to be able to keep his base and be able to live up to his campaign promise, which is, I'm going to build that wall.
That's right.
So then he decides, hey, everybody, you show me, because there's this thing in the what he has as far as the executive branch. You just have to sort of point to this and that and this. You can cobble together some rationale to be able to declare this a national emergency. And I'm sure his people are right now are looking through it to figure out, well, we'll take something from this and we'll take something from that page and we'll cut and paste all of this together. And it'll appear to be that we need to be able to bypass Congress, write ourselves a check, pulling it out of the Pentagon, the $13 billion that's available, and then we can react to this national emergency.
Well, some of this, though, he could have done with calling it an executive action without calling it a national emergency. Okay. A national emergency gives him a lot more money a lot quicker.
Right.
And that's why he's taking that sort of shortcut. But that's why it's raising all sorts of constitutional issues. They suppose there may be a constitutional crisis on hand, because even the Wall Street Journal says this seems to be a misuse of emergency powers mm-hmm. that were delegated by Congress, because it's not established for a real emergency response. It's designed to fulfill a campaign promise,
yeah.
And they use the own language of the president against him to establish that he's basically trying to fulfill a campaign promise. And then the second thing is, and then we'll hear from him, the second thing is, Congress is the one that appropriates the purse, as you often saying.
Right.
And because of that, they could very well, with Republican support, the Democrats in Congress could get enough Republican support that the Congress could actually override. They could object to this and nullify the emergency declaration if they want. Now, the president can always veto that nullification, but right now there are enough Republicans in Congress that think this is a bad precedent, including, the Wall Street Journal thinks it's a bad precedent, because you think the Green New Deal's a bad deal?
Oh.
You had a Democrat in there, and he said, be careful what you wish for. It's sort of like what you always used to say when the Democrats decided, you only need 51 votes to get judges in,
right,
except for the Supreme Court. Then the Republicans came in power and said, hey, you know what? We're going to take that 51 rule, and we're going to apply it to Supreme Court justices, too.
Yeah.
You've given us a way to, to do that.
A nuclear option.
That's the danger here for some Republicans.
Sure. Listen, if the president got in there, say it was somebody from the New Green Deal, apparently, according to those folks, the world's going to be over in 12 years. So that's a national emergency.
Those are the biblical types.
No.
This
might have been Cortez. It might have Cortez that the world will end in 12 years. But from 1976 on, there have been 59 national emergencies, just to give an example of how most of them work.
Yeah.
So Bill Clinton doesn't like the fact that Sierra Leone has blood diamonds. So what they're doing is they got a civil war going on, and we're involved in it. We're fighting for the good guys over in Sierra Leone. So somebody comes to Clinton, the Clinton administration, says, listen, the money that's coming from the diamond industry there in Sierra Leone is funding the bad guys. So we need to cut off that source of money to the bad guys, because we're spending money and trying to support the good guys over there. So they stop the import of diamonds from Sierra Leone unless they can prove they're not blood diamonds. So that's an example. And the same thing happened in Iran. Same things happened in Bosnia. The president moves in and cuts off any kind of trade, some commerce and stuff, in order to be able to protect national interest.
But I think that is just because the Congress couldn't work fast enough. It wasn't against doesn't override the will of the Congress, and
no,
it doesn't appropriate funds.
Right.
And that's what gets trickier about what Trump's doing.
Okay, so Mitch McConnell made the announcement from the Senate floor that Trump will be signing the bill and declared a national emergency.
Oh, yeah, this is yesterday. We don't need this. Let's play the president, because that's what's
Look at you wanting to hear from the president. He's going to sign it. Here we go.
I'm going to be signing a national emergency.
And while we're listening, will you stop?
The way he delivers it, you can tell it's not an emergency. I am going to be signing.
Pause. We're going to be looking
national
for
national pause I'm emergency.
Looking
pause.
For drops.
And it's been signed many times before. It's been signed by other presidents from 1977 or so. It gave the presidents the power. There's rarely been a problem. They sign it. Nobody cares. I guess they weren't very exciting, but nobody cares. They sign it for far less important things in some cases, in many cases.
Okay, grab the nobody cares. We'll use that one. He talked about why he's doing it this way.
I could do the wall over a longer period of time. I didn't need to do this, but I'd rather do it much faster. And I don't have to do it for the election. I've already done a lot of wall for the election, 2020. And the only reason we're up here talking about this is because of the election. Because they want to try and win an election, which it looks like they're not going to be able to do. And this is one of the ways they think they can possibly win, is by obstruction and a lot of other nonsense. And I think that I just want to get it done faster. That's all.
Was he taking questions or no?
I guess the teleprompter stopped working.
No, he didn't. He wasn't working off the script.
He started asking questions. Yeah,
okay, those answering questions. Yeah. He knows he's going to have to go to court.
We will have a national emergency. And we will then be sued, and they will sue us in the Ninth Circuit, even though it shouldn't be there. And we will possibly get a bad ruling, and then we'll get another bad ruling, and then we'll end up in the Supreme Court, and hopefully we'll get a fair shake, and we'll win in the Supreme Court, just like the ban. They sued us in the Ninth Circuit, and we lost, and then we lost in the appellate division, and then we went to the Supreme Court, and we won.
I'm going to play that again, unless you give me $5.
It's doggerel verse.
Okay, well, he knows he's going to go to court. I think there's already a whole bunch of people want to sue him on it, right?
Well, you know, and interesting, not just so that the Congress, the House Democrats are chomping at the bit, mm-hmm. but also, I hadn't given this much thought, property owners
right.
in Texas, for instance, don't want the government to come in and take over their land,
yeah.
and so they're going to sue as well.
Yeah, everybody's in. All right, now it'll go to court.
Yeah, and the big question is, will that now it is a 5-4 majority and two of the nominees, two of the Supreme Court justices are Trump nominees. So they say it could be a close decision one way or the other. They don't know if the conservatives on the court will necessarily side with Trump, though, because they've already both gone after Obama and George H.W. Bush for overreach. The conservatives mm-hmm. have.
Right.
So as Wall Street Journal suggests, he's taking a huge legal risk here. He could lose. He thinks he's got friends on the court, but this is one of those issues that isn't necessarily just a liberal conservative kind of divide.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so we'll have to see.
Strict constitutionalists will look there and see. The problem is the language gets kind of muddy. You have to be able to show that it is a national interest to the country that yeah. this action is taken. Draw all those lines. And then how yeah. bright do the lines necessarily be? Yeah. Can it just be a very, very thin line, almost opaque, that you can sort of see through that there is a national emergency and that this is a direct response to something that's happening? Is the country and the sovereignty of this country threatened because of what is happening wherever it is in the world?
Yeah. What constitutes an emergency?
Yeah.
Because an emergency
yeah.
means that you can override certain rules
yes.
of the yeah. road. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. It wasn't exactly an emergency, but we certainly treated it like that. The snow that fell here in the Puget Sound, it caused all sorts of problems for a whole bunch of people. And then the Seattle Times said, hey, everybody, why don't you grade the city on how well you think they did when it came to cleaning up sidewalks and just generally responding to the snowstorm? And the grade was?
Overall, B, uh-huh. which is pretty darn good. 34% gave it an A. 60% in total gave it A or B. And that is always the political question of the snowstorm is there going to be negative or positive fallout? You rarely get positive fallout, but negative fallout, it's often pointed to Greg Nichols in 2007 or 8, whenever it was, that he lost because that we didn't handle the snow very well. Now, it was a different kind of snow. It happened during Christmas. It was kind of frozen. We were not using salt at that point for environmental reasons, but it's pointed to as a reason for the demise of Greg Nichols' administration. And here, everyone seems to say that Jenny Durkin did a good enough job that they anticipated it well. They were very clear. Metro, which mm-hmm. is also always on the dime for these things, established early on what the snow routes were, right. And then an emergency snow route. They had 60 cleared arterials. Everything along those lines was done quite efficiently. Uh-huh. And most people accept the fact that if you live on a side street, like most of us do, that we could not get out of our driveway. But right. If we could just make it to a major arterial, we'd have no problem okay. getting it to work.
So overall, because every time you have a snow, quote unquote, emergency, you learn from it and then you apply what you've learned from the previous experience. So you should get better and better and better. I would also say a lot of people stayed home depending on when the thing came in. It came in on a Sunday and into a Monday morning. People said, forget it, I'm staying home, right?
That's true. And we had practice because right before that, right. We'd all practiced what it was going to be like without the viaduct.
Right.
And so people already had alternative, you know, modes of working and some maybe stayed home.
Yeah, it was
there
good,
were a lot of things
good
that broke in their favor.
It. Starting Friday night into Saturday so you don't have as many people commuting. That's great. And then on Monday, following Sunday into Monday, people took off on Monday, and then they were able to squeeze a few more days out of it. So there you go. But yeah. Interesting piece that was in Crosscut. Mike McGinn, former mayor of Seattle. You and I don't believe that the headline matches the tone of McGinn's yeah. piece, but the headline is Seattle gets an F for snow shoveling.
That's
he
right.
points out the fact that not enough citizens and not enough businesses are taking the responsibility to clear their sidewalks, and therefore it's unfortunate for people that have the ability to not ambulate on their own, whether they have a walker or they've got a wheelchair. It's almost virtually impossible for them to be able to make it across the sidewalks unplowed.
Yes, and so what he calls for is a culture shift. He says the problem is like a lot of laws that we kind of ignore. We don't really follow. One of them is that you're responsible for clearing off your sidewalk in front of your house. And he says most people, it doesn't snow that often. They're not that uptight about it. And he thinks that one of the problems about he thinks it was great that we prioritized certain major arterials, routes to hospitals and to schools. I mean, that was the kind of priority we took, but we did not prioritize pedestrians and the disabled, and that sidewalks are really crucial. If we thought of sidewalks like we think of arterials, like Aurora yeah. Avenue or Greenwood Avenue, we'd be in better shape. And he said, but how do you do that? Well, it's expensive if you actually send out thousands and thousands and thousands of crews. However, he does say, if we just did a public education campaign to tell yeah. neighbors, I personally grew up in Seattle, North Seattle, but I'm so far out in North Seattle that we never had sidewalks. So I didn't grow up thinking that was an expectation mm-hmm. that you had to clear your sidewalk, and it happens so often. But if we just said, listen, this is important because there are people, they're elderly, there are people that need walkers, yeah. there are people that need to get around, they're disabled. We need to do this as a service. He thinks Seattle would kind of, welcome that. And that's, right. we just need to kind of shift that. He also says, as we get rid of some of the snowplows, we ought to get hand crews. You mm-hmm. got hands-on crews, where crews are just people that go out and they actually do that kind of shoveling.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, this is what happened on our block.
Okay, because hurry up, I'm getting bored.
Okay, this 10-year-old showed up on our porch and said, hi, would you like, I would be happy, for $15, I will clear off your uh-huh. your sidewalks and your steps and all this. And we yeah. said, sure, that you get this kind of community spirit, that's yeah. the way to improve
that's
the world.
It. There you go, good.
Okay.
Let's talk about this guy. How do you say his name? Aziz
Ansari.
Oh, okay. So he was on Parks and Rec, and he did a piece. Did he write it, or how did it all come up? That he took a girl out on a date, they went back to his place, they yeah. do some Netflix and chilling. He exposes himself and then tells her to have oral sex with him. She gets upset, she gets to the car, she cries all the way home.
Okay, I don't think it's quite that. But anyway, he did not publicize this. A woman, this is
she writes a piece on it anonymously.
The Me Too movement, yes. After the takedown of people like Kevin Spacey right. and all this, and suddenly Aziz Ansari got drafted in, because it was basically a lot of feminists and Me Too, hashtag Me Too people thought this was an unfair takedown, but it was basically a bad date.
So then he had to apologize. He goes on the apology tour, right?
Yeah, sort of. Maybe not enough for some people, but he's now getting back into his act. And Vox, do we have sound from him?
We got some sound. Some Good okay. Morning America spoke to audience members who witnessed him. So now what he's doing, he's using the story and he's writing comedy around the story.
That's right. And according to Vox, this might be the way men should handle an accusation like this.
Mm. It was very thoughtful, the way that he addressed the allegations, that he used it as an opportunity to speak with his other male friends and female friends.
He really seemed very genuinely grateful that people were there to see him. So I think, you know, it is good that he addressed the allegation.
Interesting sort of blowback. Somebody said, oh, so he does this to this woman. She writes about him. And now you can't get tickets to his show, that it benefits him. But then in the acts, he has some pretty good jokes. He says always got confused with this other actor by the name of Hassan, who's always thinks it's, aren't you, weren't you in this and weren't you in that and weren't you in this? No, that was me. I was Parks and Rec. Were you this or that? And that was me. It was me, right? And aren't you Hassan? No. Are you the guy that did that thing to the girl? And then he goes, no, that's Hassan. So that's one of his comedy bits that are in there. But did he do enough apologizing for everybody?
Well, no. I mean, this, he's just now out on the tour, and he's starting to get good reviews for this. Now, I think basically the woman said that she sort of felt pressured into sex. Now, this wasn't like, you know, holding a woman by the neck kind of thing, but she just felt uncomfortable, and she ended up wishing she hadn't done it. And he was mortified because you can imagine, she said it was the worst date I'd ever been on.
Yeah.
So now he's sort of held up as this, in the midst of all this, you know, other chicanery, like the kinds of things that Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey and others are, Charlie
Rose, it's a move he's probably done before, and maybe it worked for him, maybe it didn't.
Yes.
But he never did it where in the, with inside the bounds of the Me Too movement. Right.
So, and the thing is that he says and it's true. He mentions all these, every guy has to look at every date he ever went on. He says, did I ever pressure someone to have sex? I mean, often the stereotype is if the man wants sex and the woman doesn't. And so there's that kind of give and take. And the question is, do men go too far when they're trying to convince the woman to do it or not? And he says it forces these kinds of questions on himself and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so at least the reports are. We haven't heard the
do you get the other side, which is the woman has sex with a guy and then regrets it and then the next day says she was assaulted?
Well, the thing is, I mean,
that happens too, right?
You do hear about that, but it's not. That is not at the that's not at the mountain peak right now. The hashtag Me Too movement, the preponderance seems to be the other way around, but it could be that. Oh, so you think most women?
No. I didn't say most.
Okay, so what are you saying?
I never said most.
You're saying more women?
No, I'm not
end
saying
up
more.
Accusing men of bad behavior.
I'm saying what happens is you get
date.
Two crazy drunk people that end up having sex. Since you don't have anybody else in there, she sobers up the next day and says, "Wow, you know that." I feel really horrible about what I just did.
Okay.
Okay, so now whether she takes responsibility for her actions, or maybe she doesn't. I don't know how many people do it. I don't know statistics to back it up.
Okay, I thought you were suggesting.
I'm just from conversations with women that are friends of mine. They explain that women do this, and then they will say, well, you know what? I felt like I didn't have a choice, or he forced me. Because to absolve yourself of your quote-unquote sin, you then start to look for reasons and explanations. The bartender overserved or the guy was too aggressive. And maybe you should just live up with the fact that, you know, you went in there, you got drunk, you had too much, and you ended up having sex with a guy. That's all.
Yes, and I would just think if we're guessing that the preponderance of men forcing women to have sex and women turning on the men unfairly is probably a smaller number than not.
I guess we will never, ever know because that's not part of the story.
Suspicions.
Yeah. I mean, I have friends. I have friends that are women that are now in their 40s.
Yes.
And unmarried or divorced. 40s and 50s right in there. And the stories that they tell, pretty incredible.
About being abused or about how they abuse men.
The world that they're in. The whole crazy, now especially with Bumble and all these other things that are out there. You should hear the stuff that happens.
But what happens? Good or bad? In other words,
I'll tell you what.
Okay,
at one point, I don't
know
what we're going to do next.
Yeah, let's do it next.
Okay, I'll tell you a crazy story. I think I told it to you off the air, but we'll share it on the air about a friend of mine.
Great. I'm looking forward to it.
Sex talk in the morning. Two guys in the middle.
Hey, it's Friday.
That's right.
It's 2 days after a thing.
Andrew, feel free to jump in on this.
The world is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change.
What? Spire's determined to get on the air, isn't it? I'm telling you that.
Okay.
Uncle Shoot Bingo. I got you. Sit down there, Jacob. Uncle Shoot Bingo. Know-it-all test. A quiz is coming up. It is like a test. And we're going to ask you five questions of the stories we covered all week. The theme is stories about snow.
How seasonal and apt.
Thank you, Tom. That's 11 o'clock. We'll get you to call a lion, and then we're going to get you on the air at 11:35. You're going to get two tickets to Seattle's opera, The Revolution of Steve Jobs. The idea behind this is the fact when Steve Jobs found out that he had a cancer that was going to kill him, he then started to search around for, like, what is the meaning of life? What does all of this add up for? That is a fascinating topic.
I know.
And to have an original opera created right here in Seattle, and you have an opportunity to go to it. It's good.
That's right. Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's going to be fun. You're going to it, I assume.
I'm
going to
see it twice, I think.
Okay.
I think I'm going to see it this weekend and then at the end of the run, too.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, always see it twice. See how it changes. Okay, so before the break, I had mentioned we were talking about consent. We were talking about this, how do you say his last name? Ansari's?
Yeah, Aziz Ansari.
Aziz Ansari, who had a date with a woman, went back to his place, and then he exposed himself, told her to do something. She didn't. She left. She cried on the way home. She said she felt
I don't know. Lisa Silverman, I don't know that he exposed himself, but it was clear that she felt pressured. She says she didn't really feel like it. They said, okay, they sat down on the couch, and they ended up getting into it, and she felt afterwards kind of bad. I don't know the details. I'm not saying that your details are wrong. I just hadn't seen that.
We're right.
So.
Okay.
Fair enough.
So the question is, then Tom said, well, they have an example of the woman left and the idea of the Me Too movement. And I said there are times that a woman can consent to a sexual act and then later feel bad about it.
Yes.
And then accuse someone of raping her.
Yes, we were questioning how often. I guess the dispute was that you seem to suggest that it happens more often.
No, I don't know. Well, the numbers are anywhere between 2% and 10% of former rape accusations are found to be unsupported. Those are the numbers.
Okay, that's a little different than a bad date situation.
No, this
still,
is where
okay.
you have a sexual encounter.
Yes,
and then the next day you say, you know what? I really didn't give consent.
Okay. Now, I'm not even sure. I think this woman that exposed what happened on her date with Aziz Ansari, I'm not even sure. We'd have to go back. I'm not even sure she's accusing him of rape.
No.
She's just talking about, this is an example of how a bad date,
I got it,
you know, happens, and this is where I felt sexually pressured.
Right. Right. I'm taking us beyond that story and broadening it out to occasionally there are situations where a woman will be involved with a guy.
Okay.
So the what happens is when it comes to the question and the actual word of consent, so consent is a verb to permit something to happen. So I think women will consent for different reasons. Some will consent because there's additional pressure while they're there.
Yeah.
Sometimes they feel like, well, I've done this, this, and this, so they feel they need to consent because I got to kind of seal the deal or finish the whole thing. Or sometimes they feel as if they can't talk to their partner about, I'm not really comfortable with this.
Right.
All of those, whether active or inactive, passive or active, is a form of consent because you went ahead and did it. Now, it doesn't mean it was rape, but what it means is there was consent. The woman then tries to sort of make it all work out in her head the next day when a clear head without alcohol is involved, and she may accuse the guy of raping her because the consent was not exactly the type of consent she wanted. That's what I'm saying.
And so what, and I don't know what your point is. Your point is you're going to give an example of somebody you know.
I'm going to give you
Then
I broadened it even more. I'm just bringing people up to speed. So then I said, you know, I know all these women that are between 40 and 55 years old and the crazy world that they live in now, especially with all this, the apps and the dates and things like that, and how sex has become this sort of strange form of currency in this world.
Okay.
I mean, that's nothing new, but just the speed in which these transactions take place seem to be proliferating.
Okay.
Now, here's another crazy story.
Okay.
And I've had conversations with people about this story, and I look forward to your interpretation. A friend of mine is very attractive. She's 45 years old. She has two kids. They were both at school. Her cable goes out. There's a knock at the door from the cable company.
This sounds like a bad porn. Okay.
She looks through the peephole. The guy is, as she said, unbelievable looking.
Okay.
Gorgeous.
Okay.
Okay. She's alone in a big 4,000 square foot house.
Mm-hmm.
The guy goes around, checks the cable things, everything else. He goes, you know, looks like everything's set. That one switch was off, but it's all set. It's fixed. He says, here's my card if you need anything else.
Okay.
He then hands her the card. As she takes the card, he takes his left hand, pushes her up against the wall, and kisses her firmly on the mouth. She said, in about a half a second, I had to decide whether I wanted to kiss him back because he was that good looking. And within another half a second, because the brain is so fast, I thought to myself, wow, this is like one of those fantasies.
Yeah.
I could see myself with the cable guy.
The cable guy, right.
And she goes, and then all of a sudden, I thought, what the hell? And then rational talking, she pushed him off, right? And she says, no, I don't think so. She gave him back the card. And he goes, all right, well, call me if you need me. And he walked out the door. I said, well, did you call the police? No. Did you call the cable guy? The cable company? No. She said, you're the first person I'm calling and telling.
Okay.
Why did she not call the police and why did she not call the cable company, Tom?
Okay, now this is, we're just playing a game here, so I don't know who this person is. So right. I'm trying to figure out a reason why she did what she did, which is not to call.
Right.
I think there's a part of her that might be thinking, listen, I may not want to turn it down next time. Mm-hmm. I want to have that option open to me.
I asked her that, and so, she said no.
She said no.
That's not the reason.
Okay.
Keep going. You got another one?
Okay. That she felt that even though he crossed the line, mm-hmm. he did it in a way that allowed her to to resist his advances, and he was very polite about the resistance, and she did not want to get him in trouble because he was so good looking.
That's it. The last part. She said it's so awful.
It's so unfair. All you good looking guys so get away with it.
She said if the guy was ugly and he was fat and his pants were crusty, the crack of his butt, and he had done that, she goes, I would have called the police
and the cable
the
company.
I would have run out of the house and screamed and yelled in the neighborhood. And she goes, but because he was good looking, I didn't report him. I said, that is so wrong because he's going to go into another house. So what are you thinking about with other women? He goes to another house and maybe the woman, he doesn't stop. And when she pushes him away, not firmly enough.
Yeah.
She goes, I know it's horrible, but I'm just saying
it's an honest, explanation of behavior that you might be embarrassed by, but they're acknowledging it. And I think that's so. Have you ever thought about being a cable guy?
Believe me, I am the furthest thing. I remember one time, her name is Lisa Webster. Very, very attractive girl at Ithaca College. Really cute girl. And she invited me over to her house to have dinner, bottle of wine. And it's what's supposed to happen. But I'm so nervous that I talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk until like 3:30 in the morning. She says to me, you know what? You should just go home.
Yeah.
My mouth was so dry. My breath was so bad from just talking the entire time. I didn't have the guts to even kiss her. And the whole date just fell apart.
But
yes.
When she said that, were you relieved or disappointed?
I don't remember. I realized at that point, I blew it.
Yeah, okay.
I blew it. It's 3:30. She's just so done listening to me. One story after another. You the listeners feel that way right now.
That's right. There's a reason the show's 3 hours and not 4 hours.
Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, well, you glad I'm sharing that story, or are people going to write in?
I think that's good. The thing is that's an awkward response, and I can imagine people writing in being upset, saying, that's ridiculous. That woman is terrible, and she needs to report it, and she should be looking out for fellow women that are going to be abused this way.
Yeah.
I understand that. But the thing is, we are not all perfect models of behavior, and I like the honesty with which she explained herself.
Got it. Take a fast and profitable break, and then more of me talking. And Tom as well. Let's not forget. Maybe you should have been in on that date with Lisa and I. All right. The guy that suffocated the mountain lion is now getting his 15 minutes of fame.
That's right.
He's got his own show on Netflix called Suffocating Mountain Lions, and I'm sure he's going to get a podcast as well. So we'll hear from him right back. All right, text line. Thank you very much, Andrew. 989-973. That's the Online Trading Academy text line, Tom, at 989-973. Are you pointing
first
up
little,
the TV?
Yeah, first little news. Supreme Court agrees to take up census case this term. Remember, the Trump administration wanted to add a question about citizenship. Are you a citizen or not? And there was objections to that because they said that a lot of people may not be then included in the census because they won't want to admit that they're not citizens.
And then they'll be undercounted.
And then it'll be undercounted, and the Supreme Court is actually going to take it up. So it's going all the way to the top.
And that question used to be in there, and then they took it out, I think, in the 50s or whatever year it was. They took the thing out of there. But, yeah, the question, was it put in there sort of as a poison pill to get people not to respond?
That's right. You're here illegally, you were still supposed to be counted.
You got to count everybody. Yeah. Everybody gets counted. All right, that was a bit of news, Tom. Lucky you had the TV on.
Yeah, that's right.
If not, we'd be talking about the guy that strangled the cougar 2 weeks ago.
We're going to do that right now, though.
More cougar news.
Cougar news, that's right.
After the last segment.
I see.
See what I did there to you?
Yeah. Now you're talking about Washington State Cougars? No.
No.
You're talking about
Colorado. Yeah. This guy, Travis Kaufman. This got to be an unbelievable experience for him to tell the story. So not only is he recounting the story of how he strangled an animal to death, but he's on television. Good Morning America.
This is just a press conference he had, but yeah, it was all over the news station.
Get ready.
I turned around and just was pretty bummed out to see a mountain lion chasing after me. So I stopped and threw my hands up in the air. And
okay, really? There's 31 more. This is how he's telling the story? Right, we're going to have to do sound effects.
He's not a born storyteller.
No, but Tom, you have to play these.
Give the guy a break.
Tom, we're doing radio here. It'd be nice if he had a little bit more zip in his voice.
Okay.
You ready?
Bring it.
Here we go. Try it this way.
I turned around and just was pretty bummed out to see a mountain lion chasing. So I stopped and threw my hands up in the air. Blow and up. I started shouting. And unfortunately, the shouts didn't deter it. It just kind of kept running and lunged at me. It was going toward my face, so I threw up my hands to kind of block my face, at which point it grabbed onto my hand and wrist. From there, it started to claw at my face and neck, and that's when kind of my fear response turned into more of a fight response, because I realized how close it was getting to my eyes, and it got a claw on my lip.
Okay, even that didn't help.
It's amazing that he was able to record the audio as he was getting attacked. It was so realistic. I was right there.
At the press conference, they should have had a relative of the cougar.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's get the other side. Oh, my God. The guy's one goes, another 21 seconds. By the way, when he said he threw up his hands, that's the sound of somebody throwing up should be in there. Here we go. Okay, here we go.
I tried to throw it off me at that point. And then we took a little tumble down the south side of the trail.
I got this.
And down there, just kind of had a little wrestling match, at which point I was able to get on top.
Don't tack him! No tack! Pin him!
A little wrestling match.
That was a wrestling match. Yeah, I think we got it, John.
Thanks, Tom. Here's some more of it.
Don't tack! 15 points. You're ahead by 15 points. It's over.
Okay, there we go.
I love the fact that he is fighting for his life against a cougar, and he's... Oh, we went tumbling down a hill. Tumbling.
Lucky fact, he pinned the back legs so it couldn't scratch him in the nether regions. Have you gotten to that yet? No. Okay, sound effect for nether regions.
At which point I was able to get on top of it, pin its back legs so I didn't get any soft tissue scratched out in my nether regions.
You know what the saddest part of this is? This whole experience is wasted on this guy. Honestly, can you imagine him? Hey, Travis. Travis, tell the story about you getting attacked by the cougar, right? And people would literally leave in the middle of it.
You need to give him polishing the apple lesson.
Right? I mean, it's awful.
Yes.
You need a storyteller to have this happen to them, right?
Yeah.
People would like, hey, I gotta jump on a call. Can you tell me how it ends? Obviously, he's alive. I just wonder what happened after.
You're a guy who's willing to lose life or limb
I would
to tell
lose
a good
an arm.
Story.
That's right. Would you rather lose a thumb to a firecracker or an arm to a shark? And the answer is, Andrew, the answer is?
Shark.
Yeah, that's right. You lose an arm. Why? You got a better story. This guy, boy,
you lose the thumb when you lose the arm, though. That's a double loss.
But a firecracker, it's your own stupid fault.
And it would be. Get a foot on its neck. And at that point, I stepped on it, on its neck with my right foot. And just slowly, after a few minutes, I thought I'd be getting close, and then I'd start thrashing again. And had a few more scratches that resulted from those thrashes at that point.